oh my. Put me in, coach, I'm ready to play fantasy. I know I turn two in a day, but the lace isn't hot in my veins. I can turn two in every way, so I turn to you two today and smash play. I'm prepared to listen. The X flipping whip got me looking way past the pitches. Statistics all that I know, and I know that who is on first, he can say I'm ready to go. I ain't trying to steal second or third, cause I wanna win first. How am I to put all of these numbers to words? I know the terms from A to Z, it's like a gift and a curse. I know the difference between a splitter and a curve, but if I can't put it in the points, man, then what's it worth? I need the truth, I need knowledge. Found this podcast with all of it, but what they call it? Turn two, what it do?
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Turn 2 Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Williams. You can find me on Twitter at MATTWY77IMS. Today on the show, we're going to be talking about a lot of the early season troubles you'll be having. COVID, injuries, low home run totals, everything like that, the slow starters. And I have a very special guest we're going to get into. Someone that I've never had on the show that like seems like I should have by now. But the first time, Gray Albright, you'll know him as Razball. He's like pretty much, he's the Raz. He's the entity known as Razball. So Gray, welcome to the show.
Hey, man, what's going on? That was the longest theme song I've ever heard in my life.
It is incredibly too long, but it was made for me, and I feel bad. Like, I've had it edited down, and I feel bad. So it's like, you know what? I tell everyone, tough. Go on. Everyone listens to podcasts on 3.5X anyway, so they could live.
I took a nap during it. We're back on now, right?
Yeah, we are live. Actually, talking about baseball, the concert is over. The warm-up act is over.
It's like you need a pitch clock for your theme song.
I tried cutting it down once. I just can't. I just couldn't do it. I talked this about with Nick Pollock. I'm like, I like the song was made for me, and I'm bringing it with me everywhere. Everyone has to suffer through it.
It's good though. It's got a good beat. I didn't realize that there was other rap fantasy baseball podcast themes though. It's good. It's good to hear. I enjoyed it. I'm just giving you crap.
No, because it's like, I mean, it is valid though, because it is like
the Irishman of theme songs though.
Well, if you go on to like, you know, these like established websites, like the real professional corporate ones like CBS, they like to have their like 5-10 seconds like welcome to CBS Fantasy. It's over real fast. And yeah. I have like, yeah, this big drawn out opening, like it's the Sopranos or something. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're going past the Jersey Turnpike exit. I grew up actually off of the exit that's on the Sopranos opening theme song. Gonna get yourself a gun. Yeah, that's my claim to fame about 23 years ago. Okay. Anyway, so what's going on, man?
Hey, they had the Super Bowl commercial that was actually kind of badass. It was for the hybrid car, but it was pretty cool for all the Sopranos fans out there. So I don't know. How's the early season fantasy baseball treating you? How are you doing in your leagues? Are you surviving the early pitfalls that make people want to pull their hair out?
Well, there's one league where we're in it together, the Labor League. And that's one of the leagues where I tend to look at the standings if I'm doing well. And then if I'm not doing well, I never look at the standings. I was looking. So anyway, so with the Labor League that we're in together, I was looking at the standings the first couple days because I was doing well. And then I think Robbie Ray got hit in his second start, and I have Robbie Ray. And I was like, I also had Tyler Mahle. So yeah. So at that point I was like, yeah, I'm not looking at the standing for at least a month. It's the end of this. I was saying that to Jeff Zimmerman, because he's also in the league with us, Zimmerman of Fangraphs. And I was saying to him that like, I can't look at the standings of that league anymore until something goes better for me. Because right now I was like, I had Daniel Bard on my bench for like, I think for four of his five saves. It wasn't a great week last week. And everything is so blown out of proportion when you have only like, 2 weeks to look at. For standings, it's like if 1 week's not good, you don't want to look at your standings, you know? Exactly. So I have, I've shut off the standings for labor. That's a 12-team mixed league, by the way. If people are wondering why I had Daniel Bard benched, it's a shallow league. So I had better options than I thought. I haven't looked at the standings, but I bet you my team's doing better than your team.
my team, for everyone listening, 12 team roto, if there was an overall for the United States for every 12 team, I may be in last place. It's so horrible. Starting pitching, I had Garrett Cole as my main buy, and we all know how he's doing. And then my SP2 is Trevor Rogers. So yes, I've been doing terrible. First week, I sat Carlos Carrasco because I just want to see how Cookie did. Obviously, he did well. Eduardo Rodriguez not doing well. I'm just brutal. And then on top of that, my hitting. Trevor Story, slow start. Trey Mancini, slow start. Kevin Smith sucks. Cedric Mullins, Luis Robert, a robber. Friend Ramirez, Tommy Pham, although he woke up this week. But guess what? He woke up on my bench.
That's how it is, though. You know what? Because that's like, it's so funny because like that is such a, you know, that's like the real kicker with fantasy baseball, because like a guy does, especially early on, because you want to trust your stallions. You want to trust your ponies to go out there and do well. Right. And yeah. So but then you do the first week and they don't do well. And you're like, you know what? It's early. I'm going to bench a couple of these guys and give them a chance to get better. And then they get better immediately on your bench. And you're like, God damn it. Why did I bench them?
This is my only 12-team league this year. I've done so many 15s, especially for Fab, because I wanted to just try to keep my mindset consistent of who I'm bidding on. So, I mean, in a 15-team league, I'm not sitting Tommy Pham. So I'm watching this. I'm like, why?
Well, so, that's it, too. Like, because it's like a lot of people are like, you know, 12 team is, 12 team mix is shallow. It's like, it's for babies. What are you, a baby? But then you're actually playing it and you're like, this is much harder than deeper leagues because you have to actually make decisions.
Oh, yeah.
In like a deep league, I just play everyone. There's no decision to make. I'm not looking at like matchups. I'm not looking at upcoming like pitchers. I'm just like, yeah. Tommy Pham's in my lineup every single day in an NL only, but we're in a 15 team mixed, but in a 12 team mixed, I probably would have benched him too. And then you have that happen. Yeah.
No, yeah. Totally. Man, I hear that a lot. They say it's like, oh yeah, it's a baby league. I mean, 10 team, like standard, like old school ESPN. Yeah. Hard. That's but you have to make these decisions. It's like, oh my God, it's so hard.
Yeah. I forgot how hard 12 team mixed is. Especially weekly, because like daily, you have like, you know, you get to Tuesday of the week and you're like, Tommy Pham's hot. I'm putting him in my lineup. I'm not going to have back-to-back games where he homers on my bench. But in a weekly league, it's like, what happened with Daniel Bard on my bench. Like I lost four saves because it's a weekly league. And, you know, when the week started, I was like, but by Wednesday, I'm like, oh my God, what did I do? Why did I start Yusei Kikuchi over Daniel Bard?
It's so horrible. And then like you have the COVID things and people get taken out of your lineup for an entire week, like on a Monday. And it's a 15 team versus 12 team. It's not like one's harder than the other. They're just different. Because everyone will say like 12 team. Oh, you have such a loaded team. Like, yeah, everyone does. If you look at it and you look at 10 team, but that makes it more difficult because have a couple of slow starters, you get buried like I did. So the comeback is on. I'll update everyone as the season goes on. See if I can come out of the basement.
Actually, I've said this. I think I tweeted this last year about like Tout Wars. They actually, you're in Tout Wars too. I forget which league are you in?
I'm in the Draft and Hold'em.
Okay. So anyway, in Tout Wars, which I think they do really well, is like when a guy is injured, like, you know, if a guy gets injured on Tuesday, even though it's a weekly league, you can replace him on Tuesday. Like, you can replace injured guys midweek, which I think is actually good for like weekly leagues. Like, I don't think, you know, if you want to play in daily leagues, I have no problem. I play in daily leagues. I have no problem with daily leagues. Like, more power to you. I'm in them. I think the real challenge is doing a daily and staying like focused on it and being like really good at it. It's a hard league to play. So I'm not down on that. Weekly is definitely a little bit easier, but I do like the fact that Tatwars lets you replace like IL players midweek, because, you know, it really sucks when you're in a weekly league and you get to like Tuesday or Wednesday and a guy is injured and you're like Tyler Stevenson, who, you know, he got run over at the plate. We don't know how long he's going to be out. It's like, now I have, you know, like possibly four or five days where he's not in the lineup, potentially. I don't know. Like, as we're recording this, I have no idea when Tyler Stevenson's coming back, but it sucks to not be able to replace a guy like that.
Yeah, and this is a topic we're going to cover later in the show, but we're into it now, so we might as well. Just these early season injuries and like COVID especially, which is just creeping up and coming on strong this week. How have you been dealing with that, especially in weekly leagues where you can't do anything? Because, I mean, like before lineups locked, you know, Jonathan India, there were some things that he might have been back, and then the coach said that he wasn't going to return until later in the week, and then boom, he goes on IL, and then the COVID players popping up. You don't know, like Mark Canha, you don't know him and Nimmo, you didn't know if they're coming back or not. Do you just usually lean completely conservative and just get them out of your lineup and just, or like, how do you deal with a lot of these guys? I know it depends on the information available, but in general, do you try to risk it and get these big bats in your lineup, or do you just try to get, you know, safe plate appearances?
You know, I think it's really like a case by case basis. It's hard to say in general, like what I do. Like, you know, I mentioned like a Tyler Stevenson where, like, you know, if a guy's going to be out for a couple days or, you know, a week, then it's a different situation than if a guy has got like, you know, a COVID IL, then, you know, you kind of have to play it by ear. I know in like a weekly league, I benched Lou Trevino because I heard he was going on the COVID IL on Monday. If it's a daily league, then you play it by ear. In a weekly league, like that kind of thing, it's like, it depends on the league. It depends on the player. Depends on the situation. Like Jonathan India has been on my bench all week this week because I knew he wasn't going to play until Friday is what the Reds said. And now the Reds have put him on the IL. So I'm glad I put him on my bench. I wasn't sure he was going to be IL'd when I put him on my bench, but I'm glad I did. And, you know, same with Trevino. And then there's like, you know, other guys that's like day-to-day injuries. It's like, yeah, I mean, you kind of have to, it's really a case-by-case basis where you kind of have to play it out and see how it goes. But I mean, you know, use your best judgment or like in my leagues, use your best wisdom. Patrick Wisdom, am I right? Huh?
I very happily have more shares than I intended to going into the season. I actually have them in Tatwars, which is actually on base percentage. So it's actually even worse. But, you know, whatever. I have him in there. It worked out well. He's off to a hot start here. All these things going on, too. It's weekly leagues. Things go wrong. People are off to slow starts. You get injuries, and you look at yourself buried in the standings, which, you know, is something you shouldn't do this early. Because you don't want to overcorrect for stats quite yet, but it's a big thing. Don't give up on your studs. People want to panic, and people really want to make adjustments quickly. And it's you have to make moves. It's not like certain data takes a certain amount of time to like stabilize, but you can't sit on your hands. You have to add people if someone's off to a hot start. But in terms of dropping people, how aggressive are you with moving on from people that you may have believed in? We're not talking really early round guys because you should never really do that. But I have a list here. Like, let's just say a lot of people were really on, and I guess this depends on how you felt about him preseason. Let's start with like a guy like Brendan Rodgers, like a middle infield guy. And, you know, he's not your starting second, you know, baseman or anything, but he's probably someone a lot of people drafted to be their starting middle infielder, just off to just a horrendous start. possibly the worst hitter in baseball to this point. One of the worst ones. Guys like at that level, like Dylan Carlson of the Cardinals, going around that same area. How do you feel about these kind of like middling, like kind of mid round picks where their success wasn't a make or break, but they're off to these slow starts where maybe you didn't necessarily truly believe in them and you want to pick up like one of these hot, you know, commodities off the waiver wire. How do you feel about those kind of like mid round picks and how much of a leash do you give them before you really start considering moving on from players like that?
Yeah. I mean, again, it's sort of a case by case basis. You know, Brandon Rogers specifically, I wasn't really a fan of him coming into the year. I had a, I don't really love that he has no real speed and he doesn't have actually much power, even though he's in Coors. So it was always kind of, okay, fine. If he falls for MI, you can do worse, I guess. Specifically about his cold start, I wouldn't put any weight into it, really. I mean, it's been 10 games. It's like, you know, 40 plus plate appearances. Wow, that's a tongue twister. I think like in that small of a sample size, the chances that he could turn it around are great. Like he could be, by this time next week, he could be hitting 300. So and that's really like his game is like 15 homer, 280-ish average, no real speed. So, I mean, if you need that, if that works for your team, then I think there's a good chance he can come out of it and be that still. You know, it's like, it's a little bit disconcerting, though, when anyone's on the Rockies because, like, Bud Black gets a bug up his ass and suddenly it's like, oh, Alan Trejo is now the start. Like, what? Like, whoa, where'd that guy come from? Like, Alan Trejo? Wait, if you want to go with someone, go with Kelton Welker. And like, no, I'm Bud Black. I do things. It's crazy. Let's see what happens. Let's try Alan Trejo, who I believed was on the some of those Tarantino movies. I think Brandon Rogers is like absolutely struggling. But and this goes for a lot of these guys. It's a, you know, it's like a week and a half, 2 weeks. So guys struggle for 2 weeks, that doesn't mean their season's over. So, you know, like him, Bobby Witt Jr., Julio Rodriguez, Dylan Carlson, who you mentioned, Bobby Dalbec, you know, I have varying levels of faith in a lot of these guys, but whether or not they're doing well or, well, in this case, they're all doing poorly right now, that doesn't really like factor into anything, like any of my decisions at this point, because like even in a 12-team league, the guys that we've mentioned, I'm kind of like, well, Brandon Rogers, I feel like in a 12-team or shallower league, I wasn't really in on him to begin with. So if you wanted to move on to someone who is like, you know, who is actually doing well, like, you know, if you're like, oh, I got Owen Miller, he's looking at me on waivers, he's winking at me, I want to get Owen Miller, like, you know, fine, go with Owen Miller. I don't really care. For Brandon Rogers anyway, I think he was really just a play in Coors. But like a Bobby Witt Jr. or Julio Rodriguez or Dylan Carlson, those guys are like, I actually like those guys still. And just because they've started cold, it's like, nah, you kind of have to wait it out a little bit.
Yeah, the rookies are kind of their own interesting thing because there was always going to be some growth issues there. I mean, Bobby Witt, he had like a 25%-ish strikeout rate in the minors. He expected to kind of bump up to 30%. He had problems with breaking balls. He was going to have to adjust. So it's something you're going to have to wait out if you put into him. What about players like we know there's not much of a sample size for, you know, Brandon Rogers. We talked about Dylan Carlson. You kind of knew what they were. They're batting where they should. They're getting the plate appearances. They're just struggling early. If this slump happened in July, no, you know, you may not even freaking notice. What about a guy like Lane Thomas? It was a big name people were on as a sleeper this year. They were hoping, though, that he would have led off for the Nationals. They alluded he was not going to happen at the end of spring training. They said it was going to be Cesar Hernandez, and that's basically what's happened. Lane Thomas hasn't really been at the top. So how about a player like that where you were maybe if someone drafted him banking on hitting towards the top of a lineup, in front of like a, you know, Soto, Bell, Cruz, and all of a sudden he's at the bottom and struggling down next to Victor Robles. Is that a different circumstance? Where this is like a general question too. When you've seen a change in role, where he's, you know, someone's like batting lower in the lineup, or maybe getting like a couple of days off, like when do you start to worry about that? Is because you obviously can't wait as long there. And I know this is case by case too, but like let's using Lane Thomas as an example.
Yeah, no, I mean, Lane Thomas is a concern for sure. And I actually wrote a sleeper post on him in the preseason. So I'm trying to be patient, but I am concerned. I thought there'd be more there than there has been so far. You know, he is he's a solid plate discipline guy, or at least he showed he was, you know, in previous years. He hasn't been quite as good this year. He's striking out a lot. It's a concern. The whole thing is a concern. But yeah, I mean, I kind of am trying to be patient with a guy like Lane Thomas because I did have pretty high hopes for him. So, you know, all it takes is him to go, you know, get hot for like a week. And, you know, for Davey to realize that, like, he should be hitting leadoff and Cesar Hernandez is not the leadoff guy. So, I mean, and that's an easy fix to, like, his role that could happen pretty easily. But, yeah, I'm not really thrilled with Lane Thomas. I'll be honest. He's probably a guy who, you know, come May 1st maybe have to reevaluate and say, like, okay, you know, possibly – you know, move on from him in shallower leagues. You know, at this point, I mean, in a 10-team or 12-team mixed league, Lane Thomas is either on your bench or has already been dropped. But in a 15-team mixed or an NL only, you know, NL only, you're kind of stuck with what you're stuck with. But in a 15-team mixed, you know, by May 1st, Lane Thomas may be he may be off of some teams. I could see him starting to get dropped in NFBC or, you know, just 15 team in general.
He does have interesting environment around him for a struggling guy in, you know, with that kind of sleeper tag on him because he's batting towards the bottom of the lineup. But you, like you said, there's actually there's a quick path to turn around here because Cesar Hernandez is leading off, terrible year. His competition is Yadiel Hernandez, Victor Robles. I mean, there's not much there too. I mean, yeah, one hot week, Lane Thomas could not only stay in every day, but he could bat towards the top of the lineup. It could happen quickly. It is still very early. One of the rookies that was on this list that kind of stands out now a little more after I put him on there is Bryson Stott. A lot of guys, Rob DiPietro, Deadpool hitter. This is one of his guys. He's sharp. He called him making the team, which he did because Alec Bohm and Didi would struggle. And Stott got an opportunity, but he's gotten off to a really slow start in cores. He's now sat like two games. Didi Gregorius actually got hit on the hand out of the lineup. Still, Bryson Stott is on the bench. That is a massive concern. So where are you at on him? How did you feel about him preseason? I think we'll see the rest of this week's goes. I mean, usually Fab's on Sunday for most people. He looks cuttable in all formats to me just because the Phillies, obviously, if you can't put him into cores when Didi has a hand problem, you probably gives you a good idea where the Phillies view him.
Yeah, he's been really disappointing so far. Again, it's like, you know, you try and like look at it as like, okay, it's been all of 9 games. He only has 30 at bats. So, you know, you try and remain patient in deeper leagues, but shallower leagues, yeah, I mean, he can't. Even a 15-team mixed league, I can't see Bryson Stott being – he's either in your lineup and your team's doing awful or he's on your bench because he's not – he hasn't been doing anything. I mean, there's really no reason why. Like, I have I drafted him in a few places, so it's hurting me in a couple places. I have him in an NL-only league, and like I mentioned before with Lane Thomas, there's no moving on. I mean, if – the Phillies move on by, you know, demoting him at that point, then I'm going to have to drop him in an NL only. But for right now, I have Bryson Stott as I think my utility guy. I got him for $1 and I felt like I, I looked like a genius, like coming out of camp. I was like, oh my God. I was like patting myself on the back, turning to myself in the mirror and being like, yeah, man, you're smart. Now, I don't know, man. I don't look as smart anymore. So yeah, hopefully all these guys, I mean, it's so early that, like, you know, Bryson Stott could really, I mean, he just needs a good game, really. Like, you know, because the Phillies don't really want, I don't think they won Didi Gregorius either. Like, I don't, like, the opportunity is there for Stott. And, you know, up until the major leagues, he's never really shown a propensity for striking out. So he should be okay. You would think he just needs to, like, get out of his own head, or I don't know, maybe a couple lucky bounces and he has a 3-for-4 game and he gets back on track. I don't know. I don't know what it's going to take, but hopefully he does it before he gets demoted.
Yeah. If the big takeaway from anyone who just listened to this whole thing, and we're just talking about Bryson Stott of the Phillies, slow starters, it's not a large sample size. You got to wait most of these guys out. It's still way too early to give up on guys, especially ones you've believed in. If you had teetering guys like Brendan Rodgers and you have something else on the waiver wire, it's not like there's not going to be a big net loss there in the end, probably, because Brendan Rodgers is Brendan Rodgers. But yeah, the only real worry here is if there's a actual change in playing time. Like you were saying, Stott has sat a couple of games here. That is the worry, not necessarily if he was playing every day, you know, hopefully. Oh, yeah, Scott, him sitting twice in Colorado hurts. We're going to go back to some of the latest news, guys. I skipped over this in the beginning because we kind of dove into the early season injuries and COVID and some of the slow starters. So just some latest news that's interesting. Nothing actionable here, but we got to talk about it. Ronald Acuna, 1-for-3 with a double in his minor league rehab start. The Braves say they're still targeting May 6th for his debut. Again, actionable. There's nothing you can do. You drafted him. You're holding him. You're playing him. It's Ronald Acuna. What are your expectations here? Just because I kind of shied away from really talking about him much because it just seemed like everyone else was in this preseason. But since the time is rapidly approaching, what are your expectations here? Like, if you're in a trade league, is this someone where, you know, you maybe try to take advantage and move him while the hype gets closer to his date? Are you expecting him to run? Like, what do you think Acuna is going to do here coming off his injury?
Yeah, no, actually, you know, I got a comment on Razzball today asking me about a trade offer, and I was and it was a good trade. I was thinking about it, and I was like, I still want Acuna, so it was a Acuna or Corbin Burns, and I still went with Acuna because I still believe in Acuna, and I don't go for high starters. I don't believe in, like, drafting high starters. I don't trade for high starters, but I did question myself for a second because I was like, Corbin Burns is pretty good. I mean, that is good. Like, if you're like in on Acuna, you're in on him at, like, you know, maybe 10 overall at this point, and Corbin Burns isn't far off of that. So, yeah, I mean, you know, it's like something like that. If you were a guy who wanted to go out, or a lady, I suppose, wanted to go out and grab a top bat or a top arm with Acuna, now would be the time to do it because, you know, I think – at this point, his value is probably maybe when he first comes back and he hits his first home run, maybe his value will be even higher. But yeah, I mean, there is a chance. I mean, we've seen it. It's not like Acuna's only had one injury in his career. There's a chance that, you know, he's running hard into second and he gets injured again. I mean, it could happen to anyone. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, it could happen to Jose Ramirez. Like, who knows? Like, injuries happen. So I'm not saying Acuna's the only person.
Kiss of death on J-Ram.
Yeah, I just jinxed that. I just jinxed J-Ram. Sorry about that. But, I think Acuna is I feel like at this point he's a good buy and a good sell. Like, I can see it going either way. Like, if you're –
well, it depends,
like,
right?
If you want to grab him in a trade for, like, you know, if you need a bat – by all means, I have no problem going out and getting Acuna. But also, if you wanted to sell him for, like, another piece that you needed, I have no problem with that either. We don't know what we're getting. All we know is that he's coming back, you know, soon, knock on wood, and he's going to be great. I don't see why. Like, if he's healthy and he's back on the field, I don't see why he's not a top three overall player. So, you know, take that.
And Ronald Acuna, I mean, this is anyone coming off like injuries. The hype gets real. People get excited when a player starts to come back. And that's why I always, even if you're in on Acuna, if you drafted him, you're in on him. That doesn't mean you shouldn't check the trade off, check the wire. Anyway, people could get overexcited and they may offer you someone you like even more. Just because you like them doesn't mean someone else isn't more excited. And this could be at a point where maybe you had an injury go down. You drafted Jacob DeGrom. Maybe you want a pitcher. Your hitting's doing well. You want to move him for a pitcher. There's a lot of ways to go.
Did you say Jacob DeGrom?
I'm not Justin Mason. I'm DeGrom free. Even though I'm a Mets fan, I know better than that.
No, I would not. Yeah, I would not trade for Jacob DeGrom. If that's what you just said, I'm sorry.
No. I said if you had drafted Jacob DeGrom,
you needed to acquire
a pitcher.
Yeah. No,
you were saying that you don't like to draft or trade for early pitchers. I don't either. I said I have Gerrit Cole one share in labor because I just wanted to land one top pitcher because I liked so many late ones. But the idea was I would, you know, spend money on my anchor and then get some other guys sprinkled in. Obviously, Gerrit Cole has been horrendous, atrocious, abysmal. What the hell's going on? Why does Gerrit Cole suck, Gray? The whiffs look good. He's adding in a cutter. He's just getting, you know, he's getting bombed. When it came out that there was players that ended up using sticky substances at the end of last season, everyone jumped back on Cole. Oh, he must have been cheating. And I hate to, you know, he's the poster boy and it's unfair, but man, this starting ain't helping him out much. His first strike percentage is down from like 60% to 40%. So, I mean, I don't know if he just doesn't have a grip on the ball, but whatever it is, it looks terrible. Anyone who drafted him is not feeling too good. Is this a buy low for Gerrit Cole, or is this like, thank God I didn't draft him for Gerrit Cole?
So I don't remember. How much did you pay for him in labor?
I think like 32 or 33.
Yeah. So that's what I thought. So what I was going to say was, I think in labor, like not to defend you because you're a big boy, you could defend yourself, but I think in labor, all the prices for top starters were going for so low that I almost drafted a top starter in that league because they were going for so low. Like, I think I want to say Ariel Cohen got like Jacob DeGrom for like $21. And I was like, what? I mean, I wouldn't draft Jacob DeGrom. And at that point, you know, that was like a month before, you know, that was way before an injury or anything. That was even before spring training started. So like, you know, at $21 though, I was even like, damn, like that was a really good price for DeGrom, and you got Cole for a good price. So I can't like fault that. I don't draft top starters though, specifically for like, you know, because I just prefer top bats. Like that's just the way I like to build teams better. But with Gerrit Cole, like you mentioned, like the first strike percentage and all this stuff is so skewed because of one start. So it's like, it's hard to really get a gauge on so many of these guys. Like, I don't know if like, you know, it's necessarily, you know, like the sticky substance, like the spider tack, maybe it could be, but also because there's such a small sample size for Gerrit Cole at this point, he's got 11 and one third innings, that, you know, his K per nine and his walks per nine, they all look so crazy. Like his walks per nine right now is 5.6 walks per nine. Like that is like twice as much as any walk per nine that he's ever had in a major league season. But that's also because of one game and actually just one inning where he walked four guys in an inning. So it's like, so everything gets blown out of proportion for that. So do I think he's a buy low? Yeah, probably. People are probably panicked. You know, like if you can get someone who's completely panicked on Gerrit Cole, I say go for it. Go out and try and get him. I'm not like a guy who usually goes out and gets a top starter, but if you can get Gerrit Cole for like a, I don't know, like a, you know, maybe a top closer, like not even a top closer, maybe Rossio Iglesias and like a, you know, maybe a smaller other piece I don't know, maybe. Or if you can get him for like Randy Arozarena or like Tyler O'Neill or like a, you know, a solid outfielder. I mean, you know, I think you know what you're getting with Gerrit Cole. I don't think he's like toast just because he had a bad start and a half. Like if you can get him for, you know, something like think like around where you drafted, you know, maybe like a top 35 to 55 to 70 overall player, like in that range, like if you can get Gerrit Cole for that, I'd do it in a second. If you're like, but if you're looking at like Gerrit Cole or Jose Ramirez, no, I wouldn't have done, but I wouldn't have done that to begin the season. Like I wanted Jose Ramirez over him anyway. So like, I'm not the person to say like, you know, like I wouldn't pay a dollar for a dollar, but if you can get 75 cents on a dollar, sure. Yeah.
What do we call this? A lot of people were really in on this player I'm about to talk about. We were discussing Gerrit Cole, but we're talking about something you can trade for him. Let's say first base was deep. Let's say you got a good backup second, first baseman, someone who's starting at your corner. Very hot start for a player people were in on, Matt Olson, like blistering the ball. He's going to have a monster year. Would you consider trading a Matt Olson for a Gerrit Cole?
Yeah, that's a totally fair trade. I would not do it because I like Matt Olson and yeah, I don't like Gerrit Cole. But in general, for and specifically for another person, if they wanted to get a top starter, that's a totally fair trade. If someone were to comment on Razzball and say, hey, Gray, hey, handsome face, I'm wondering if you would do Matt Olson for Gerrit Cole, I'd be like, yeah. Totally. I would do that trade, but I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it for my own team. I would do it for someone else's team.
If you need a pitcher, it's tough to trade for those top aces. They're not available very often unless they're injured. So this is a unique opportunity to try to get one. Another one that is struggling a bit, Robbie Ray. Yesterday he did well, seven innings. Still the strikeouts aren't quite what we're used to. Seven innings, one earned, four walks, unfortunately, peering, you know, peeking back out the walks, five strikeouts versus the Twins, a team that strikes out quite a bit. The White Sox, a team that strikes out a bit before that, 6 1/3, six earned, four strikeouts. And then he faced the Rangers in his first game was 6 innings, two earned, four strikeouts. So what, I don't know what to make of Ray. Obviously it's very early. He's left his guru in Toronto and went to Seattle. He's the opposite of Cole, though. His F strike, as far as starting, to, you know, going in the zone, he usually lives around the 50 to 60% area, more 60. He's right now is like 73.4%. He's just giving up a ton of contact. Any worry here? So I guess at one, let's pretend you believed in Ray, because if you didn't, this is an easy decision. But if you were just hoping for the best here, it's weird that there's no strikeouts because right. Worst case scenario, if he slipped, you were hoping to still get those strikeouts. What are your thoughts on Robbie?
Right. Yeah, Ray no, here? I was in on Robbie Ray. I'll cop to Robbie Ray. I was totally in on him. I drafted him in a few places. I thought I felt like what I was saying in the preseason on Robbie Ray was, you know, last year, he was like, you know, he was an ace. And you can't be an ace in the major leagues over the course of 190 plus innings without actually having shown improvement over previous years and actually being that good. Like you can't fake 190 innings of being an ace. So
he's been this good before. Right. He was this good before in Arizona.
Right. Yeah, no, completely. You know, and I always felt like, you know, he was similar to another guy who came out of Arizona with Max Scherzer, whereas like their stuff was so good. Once they were able to command it, it would be like electric and they'd be able to like, you know, strike out everyone because, you know, if you're commanding electric stuff, you're going to be good. So the problem with Robbie Ray is like, I think I'm like I mentioned on Razzball on today's Daily Notes, I said that, you know, I'm not fully concerned, but I'm not concerned. there's definitely some concern here because like you don't lose, you know, velocity. Like Robbie Ray has lost velocity. He's lost Ks. He's struggling with command. Like this is not great for him. Like this is major warning signs that like, you know, and he's in a really good park. So I think in like Safeco, he can fake being decent enough that I'm like not fully concerned. Like if he can throw 190 innings this year with Safeco, I think we could still get a 3.75 ERA, 8+, 9+ K per nine, even if this is the new Robbie Ray iteration. Now I'm hoping, because he even said, you know, his second start was in Chicago. The weather was awful. He even said to reporters, like, hey, my velocity might have been off, but it was freezing out there. So that could totally be what's going on. I don't want to say, like, I'm not 100% panicked, but I'm definitely a little bit concerned, a little bit. It's not great. I'll be honest. I'm a little scared.
One thing to, I guess, encourage, I don't know if this is encouraging or discouraging, so I'm just going to say it. We're talking about Robbie Ray. He's basically a two-pitch pitcher. Last year, he mixed in his curveball about 6% of the time, and he threw in and changed up a little bit. His curveball this year, he's only thrown 8 times. It's gotten crushed. So basically, he's back to basically four-seam slider, but that's kind of his bread and butter anyway. His fastball has actually been fine. It's performing actually kind of the way it did last year. There's really no difference. His slider has not been good at all. As far as like it, I don't know if it's early season, cold weather. The whiff rate's down from 45.5% to 31%. If you look at it, is a chase rate on it, the O swing, which is the swings outside of the strike zone for anyone listening not aware. 38.3% last year in his amazing season, down to 27.8% this year. He's putting it in the zone about like, you know, maybe 7 points higher. And he's just giving up like 85% contact. He's usually a 77.
Seattle's best. But now it's Seattle's best contact pitcher.
Yeah. So, I mean, it is so you can look at it two ways, right? He's two-pitch pitcher. Therefore, one of them's not working. But if he fixes it, he's good to go. But he's only a two-pitch pitcher. So if one of them's not working, that's unfortunate. So, everyone wants to see if you should buy or sell on Robbie Ray, wait one more time. See how his slider looks in his next start. Look for some improvement there. Because that is pretty much the crux of his issue at the moment. But still, again, early and a new city, which never, you know, is always interesting. Bullpens. Let's talk about bullpens. Garrett Whitlock got the save in Boston. Hard to gauge. This is what everyone thought would happen. A lot of people were half or Matt Barnes, half or Whitlock. Because like people are like, oh, Barnes got paid. He's going to be the closer. And like Whitlock, he's going to start. And then they kind of made Whitlock this kind of hybrid Loaiza, Seth Lugo type dude in the middle innings. And they let a couple of guys like Jake Diekman have a go. They had Hansel Robles, which as a Mets fan just makes me shiver every time I hear his name. That's perfect. For anyone not listening, Greg just pointed to the sky because, of course, every Titanic home run is a ground rule, is just a basic pop up to Hansel Robles. what do you think of Garrett Whitlock here? Is if you were in a shallower league where maybe he happened to be available, is this someone you'd want to try to be aggressive on for the bullpen? In deeper leagues, he's definitely rostered here. But what are you thinking here about the Boston bullpen?
I would say Whitlock, I think, should be owned in all leagues, even shallow leagues. If shallow leagues, you should be using solid middle relievers for ratios and Ks anyway. So Whitlock should be owned either way. For who's gonna get, like, I would say Robles, Whitlock, Diekman, Diekman, is it Diekman? I would say any of those guys or Barnes could get the next save. Like the Red Sox, I don't think Cora really has a set closer. I don't think he's going to. I think Whitlock could be used in a, you know, could be used in the sixth inning next time out, or he could be used in a ninth inning. So I honestly, I don't think anyone knows. I don't think Cora knows who's going to be the closer. And that's not to say, you know, Cora's a giant dummy and has no idea who to use. I just don't think – I think it's going to be – a game's going to dictate who he uses to be the closer. So I don't think there's any way for us to tell who the closer is going to be. I guarantee you that, like, I would bet a lot of money that Barnes will get saves at some point. Whether he's going to get the next save, I don't know. Probably not. Maybe. Who knows? Robles could get the next save. But again, I don't know. I don't think anyone knows.
Yeah, and that's Garrett Whitlock. We're talking about the Red Sox bullpen. Going into a couple more starting pitchers to end this. Before we get into some injured pitchers and returning ones, let's talk about Josiah Gray for a second. He was one of my favorite guys that I loaded up on. He has a decent price. He's one of the big pieces that came over in the Scherzer and Trey Turner trade to Washington. They throw him and Kevin Ruiz right into their major league roster. He looked good last year. He just had a massive walk problem, which, you know, it's just something he's going to have to work on. First game of the year, 4 innings, 4 earned, 5 strikeouts versus the Mets, gave up 8 hits and 2 walks. Second inning against the Braves, much improved, 5 innings, 1 hit, still 3 walks, 5 strikeouts. And then a couple days ago against the Diamondbacks, so grain of salt, they are just brutal. 5 1/3, 1 earned on a home run, 8 strikeouts. Are you Josiah Gray guy? Because this is someone, especially in like shallower formats, he could be available. But this is someone in deeper formats if trades are there. He's someone if I didn't have, I would probably be looking to acquire because there'll be bumps in the road. But I think that he can be pretty darn solid for the rest of the year. Maybe like what you used to get out of Robbie Ray, like the late seasons in Arizona where you get the occasional blow up with some strikeouts.
Yeah, no, come on. Yeah, no, totally. You know, I think also he's probably a week two's version of Kyle Wright or Jesus Luzardo, actually Luzardo is a good example of what happens when you trust a young pitcher. I mean, yeah, I think Josiah Gray can be great. I think there's going to be blowups for sure. I was watching him versus the Diamondbacks yesterday. And I would say, you know, I was really impressed. I mean, the Diamondbacks are pretty terrible. they're not good. But, you know, Josiah Gray looked excellent. He looked like he was in, you know, total command of his pitches. It was like he was doing what he needed to do. It was good to see. I think he's going to be great. I don't think it's necessarily going to be this year. There could be flashes of it. I could see, you know, potentially a 9-inning, 12K, shutout here or there maybe this year. But as you said, I could also see blowups happening. Like there's going to be ups and downs. I do like him though a lot.
Yeah, he's just, if you're smart about it, if you're in need of a pitcher, I think you can go out there and instead of
you know where he's going to go. Sorry, not to interrupt, but he'll be next year's in drafts. He'll be like Shane McClanahan next year. It'll be like, oh, now is the time to get in on Josiah Gray at like 75, 85 overall. Like he'll zoom up, I think, ADP for next year.
I think that's actually a great comp as far as value. Because, yeah, that is the kind of way Shane Mack came into this year. Everyone just knew the upside and saw what was going to happen with a full off season. So yeah, I think you're right there. And that's Josiah Gray. A couple of pitchers coming back from injury, Luis Castillo. He's going to have a rehab assignment Sunday and then hopefully be back soon enough. He had that shoulder issue. And then Lucas Giolito throwing a sim game today, could pitch as early as this Sunday. Giolito is what it is. We don't have to dig into that too much. I mean, would you actually one quick question, because it's more of a philosophical thing with fantasy baseball pitchers like that. If let's say he comes back Sunday, you're in a daily league, if you're in a weekly league, you're screwed. No one started him. But do you usually start guys like that fresh out of the gate, like your aces your top aces like Giolito fresh off an injury like that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it depends on the league situation, and every. It's a case-by-case example for most of these guys, but I think with Giolito, I can't imagine any league where I wouldn't start him the first time out. And it's also, like, you know, thinking about, like, DeGrom, if he ever comes back. Like, certain guys, like ace guys, I mean, they know when they're ready to go, and – you know, you got to trust your aces. So yeah, I would start a ace, and I think Giolito is an ace. I would start him the first time out for sure. Other guys, even like Luis Castillo, I think is like a guy you'd probably start, you know, in most leagues, at least, I think I would start them even the first time out, because a lot of these guys, like a veteran pitcher, you know, they rehab as much as they need to, and they have a good idea of where they're at. So, you know, I'd probably start them. Other guys, I mean, you know, there's certain situations where I could see benching certain guys coming back from the IL, because it's just such a, you know, it's an unknown, or if the matchup isn't good for, like, you know, a lower level pitcher. But yeah, I mean, you know, I think a lot of them are okay. Like, you know, Alex Cobb just got injured the other day. So when he returns, like if he's in, you know, if he's in San Fran, I'd probably start him against anyone. And if he's got like, but if he was in like Coors, I'd probably be like, nah, I'd just bench him for his first start back, you know, like, so it'd kind of be a start by start basis kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, your aces, you more or less got to start.
Luis Castillo, and we were talking about Lucas Giolito coming back, simming today, could be back Sunday, assuming everything goes well. And but Luis Castillo is an interesting pitcher. One, how do you feel about him coming off of last year, where he was hyped up? He had an unbelievable end of the year after a very brutal start. And then he had a little bit of a shoulder issue during spring training or during the offseason. A lot of people may have drafted him without knowing that information because of the lockout. A lot of information just kind of flooded in afterwards. Do you see this as, do you think this could be a good buying opportunity for Castillo? Like, go check to see if maybe someone drafted him who wasn't necessarily excited? Or is this just one of those things where you don't, if you drafted him, you have him, you're not looking to seek out shoulder injuries? Like, yeah. It's a unique situation as far as if you need a pitcher and are looking to acquire one.
Yeah, no, actually, I was in on him. I drafted him before I found out about the shoulder. I would not go out. I wouldn't acquire a pitcher with a shoulder injury. I wouldn't go out and get him. I wouldn't. I mean, unless the price was like incredibly cheap, it wouldn't be worth the headache. I wish I could unload him in all the leagues I have him. I don't want him anymore.
How low would you go?
It kind of depends on the situation, but like we were talking about earlier, guys who have started low, like I would buy Bobby Witt Jr. or Julio Rodriguez low if I could with Luis Castillo. I think also if you could get like, or, you know, or Dylan Carlson even, potentially, I guess, if you're able to, like, you know, or even buy high on a guy, like if someone's like, wow, CJ Cron, this is a sell high situation, you know, I would take a guy like that. I mean, it depends.
How about this? How about a position for position trade? And then we'll move on here. What if someone drafted Tyler McGill and wasn't necessarily sold on his start, and they offered you him straight up for Luis Castillo?
Give me him. Give me McGill for sure. I didn't watch. Usually I watch the Mets a lot because I like their broadcast booth, but I actually didn't watch the McGill start yesterday, but the line didn't look great. So if someone wants to get out, I mean, I know McGill, I think McGill's solid. I would still be buying on McGill. I think there's a buying opportunity probably because of the line yesterday. It wasn't great. It wasn't terrible, but it wasn't as good as I think people were hoping. But I would be, yeah, I would tiff. I think I'd go McGill. Like Kyle Wright, if someone thinks they're like selling high on him, I'd be like, yeah, I'll take Kyle Wright. I mean, I prefer a pitcher without injuries versus one with injuries, if you can.
All right. And that's, we were talking about Luis Castillo coming back. Well, he's rehabbing Sunday. We'll see how it goes. All right. And to end the latest news, we got a couple of, Luke, we had this play at the plate during the San Diego and Cincinnati game where Luke Voit, big lumbering fellow, come rounding third. And I don't know what you made of this. It didn't necessarily look dirty. He kind of stumbled into home. He's kind of an awkward guy. But then he kind of threw this, like, you know, WWE forearm elbow into Tyler Stevenson, who's now on the IL. Tommy Pham after the game says it looked dirty. He knows a gym owner who's going to rent out his gym to, like, let him fight Luke Voit. So, yeah, what did you think of that play? You didn't see this?
No. I saw the play at the plate. I didn't see that Tommy Pham was renting a gym to try and no knives, I'm hoping.
Yeah, he doesn't have a good track record in non-sanctioned fights.
Yeah. If I were Tommy Pham, I probably wouldn't get involved in a non-sanctioned fight. I'll be honest. I don't know. I think Luke Voigt definitely smushed his. I think he smushed him in the face. Like he seemed to give Tyler Stevenson a smush, but yeah. I mean, a play is it's happening in real time. You're not thinking about, like, you're just trying to protect yourself.
Luke Voigt is a big dude. He's not exactly Ken Griffey Jr. out there athletically. So I don't think he's going to gracefully slide into
home. I didn't realize earlier in the year, Luke Voigt had got his first steal of his career. And that was in like 1,400 plate appearances. So he's not a fast dude. And he's not he's not agile. He's got, he's, as you said, lumbering, I think is a good way to say Luke Voigt. He smushed Tyler Stevenson's head. I do think it was kind of cowardly for Luke Voigt to not start the next day. Luke Voigt is out of the lineup. I do think that's kind of lame.
Knowing what I know about Voigt, I'm sure he wanted to be in the lineup. His manager just wanted to maybe de-escalate the situation. Tommy Pham versus Luke Voigt. I think we put this thing on pay-per-view. Who's that? Who's the guy on YouTube who's constantly fighting? Jake? One of the YouTube guys. It's like Floyd Mayweather and
Jake,
all that.
Jake the Snake? I don't think I know a Jake.
one of those YouTube asses that is constantly getting on pay-per-view fights.
Oh, Jake Paul.
There you go.
Yeah.
Put him on the other card there.
Yeah, actually, I guess I do know a Jake. Jake Paul. Wait, though. He's a fighter, so he wouldn't be... so he's reffing this thing? I don't know. I say, you know what?
Put
Tommy Pham in a room by himself and see what. And I think he'd start a fight with himself in the matter of like an hour. Like I don't know. Tommy Pham needs to de-escalate Tommy Pham, I think.
Yeah, he took it a little. He looked to be extra.
My man sees a dirty slide. He's like, I'm renting a gym, dude. Take it easy, man. It's okay. It's okay. It's all right, man. Let's chill.
Well, at least it's not in a parking lot. He has better odds inside than outside. The new pitch clock has apparently been in use for a while in the minor leagues. You can't trust anything MLB says, to be honest. But anyway, they say that it shaved 20 minutes off of games. I always say, I don't think actually the length of games is the problem. It's the pace of play. Like people don't want the pitcher like freaking messing around constantly. So I actually think this is nice. It'll keep a nice pace. How do you like this? Is this something that as an MLB fan, a lot of people are like, usually hate new things like, oh, new rules. They're all terrible. But what do you think of this one?
A lot of new rules are terrible. When you do like a 7-inning doubleheader and a guy starting on second, that actually is terrible. So,
All right. You're going to hate half of what I'm about to say. This, the man on second is ridiculous. I hated the 7-inning doubleheaders and I think they were stupid. They weren't even real games, but I got to say last year watching them, it wasn't the worst thing in the world to watch because it felt like when runs were scored early, it's like it immediately made the game feel more exciting. So like, even though I am still kind of, I'm still against it. They were entertaining. Like they weren't the worst. They weren't as bad as I thought they were going to be. If that makes sense. Cause I don't know, just it kind of like,
I mean, that's why there's chocolate and vanilla. So you can have your own opinion, even if your opinion's wrong. I mean, that's fine. I honestly didn't really care. It made my job easier because I recap games. So it made my job easier having games end at the seventh inning. So I was like, I mean, honestly, from my own perspective, it made things easier for me. I did think it was kind of like, why are games ending at 7? Like, why? What does that have to do with, like, COVID or anything? Like, it's just, like, so random. And also, like, you know, I never really liked the, I don't know, maybe because I'm an old fart, but I kind of liked the, play at second where, like, the runner would try and take out the guy, and the neighborhood play, I was kind of fine with that. Now with, like, oh, we have to make sure, like, if the runner comes off the bag and he's, like, holding the tag, like, oh, come on, man. Like, you don't need to touch second. Like, I didn't mind not touching second. Like, so that was kind of, like, an old school thing that I was okay with. But with the pitch clock, going back to the original question, I think if you're getting rid of, like, a guy leaning in and shaking off the catcher, good. No one cares about that. No one goes to the game and is like, hey, man, did you see how much he was shaking off the catcher? Pretty cool, huh? Like, no one's there for that. So if you're cutting out a lot of that nonsense, then by all means, I say pitch clock it. Pitch clock it up. I don't care. Like, I'm in favor of having robot umps. Anything that speeds up the game and takes out, like, a lot of the stuff that no one cares about, I'm fine with that. Like, if they're like, you know what, you only have 30 seconds between innings, which they'll never do because they need commercial time. But, you know, like, any stuff that has nothing to do with the actual game, like, I'm fine with that. If they're like, you know, you can't shake off a catcher for 45 seconds, then great. Shake them off. That doesn't change my opinion of anything.
Yeah, you try to bring kids to the game, and they're sitting there eating their hot dog, and it's like, oh, what happened? Nothing. I've been sitting here for 1 minute, and they've thrown one pitch because they've thrown over to first twice, and they're shaking off the catcher, and they've had a mound visit. It's terrible. Mm-hmm. I do love the. Have you slightly off topic as far as rules? But have you seen that? What are they? The Savannah Bumblebees or something crazy? You know what I'm talking about? There's mm-hmm. that. There's that, like, Harlem Globetrotters type team. There was this video where, like, I guess if there's a strikeout that's caught or dropped or something, like, every, like, all nine position players have to catch it. Have to touch the ball before they can actually tag the runner out. But they actually had a new rule they introduced the other day where, if the opposing team hits a foul ball, if the crowd catches it, the hitter's out. I would be so in for them just making that a rule.
That's good. I had an idea where, and I don't even know if this is illegal, to be honest. Like, this might actually be within the rules right now. Like, mm-hmm. what if you did a infield shift where you took all your guys and you crowded them right around the hitter so the hitter couldn't see the pitch?
Just a tunnel right in the middle?
Yeah, I think that's legal as of right now.
Yeah, like, someone might die.
No, but, like, there's also, I mean, you'd have to have the fielders, like, hold their crotch like in a penalty kick in soccer. They might have to be in a suit of armor, but I do think that there might be something here where, like, if everyone was just standing right next to the batter can't concentrate. There's four guys standing in his face screaming at him. Man, I don't know if that's actually legal or not, but I would like to see someone try that.
I always get nervous when I see the third baseman charging in on a bunt, and then the hitter goes butcher boy, and I'm like, oh my god, he's gonna hit him in the face.
I mean, you know, the people on the field might have to wear helmets. I don't know exactly all the specifics, but It's still a work in progress. But so my question, though, on the Savannah thing to you, which I'm honestly asking, I don't know. So are they like, is it like the Globetrotters in that they're like minor leaguers who have burnt out of the minor leagues and they're just, like, goofing around and getting paid like the Globetrotters were, like, NBA guys that just burnt out of the league or something?
Yeah, I'm not sure, to be honest, because I only heard about them recently, and they do crazy. I mean, I saw a thing the other day where this guy went to the plate with a bat that was on fire, And he literally went up there spinning it, and then he hit like an opposite field double or something. So I don't know actually where the players come from. They're all decent. I mean, I guess, you know, I mean, it depends on your, you know, your opponent. If you have an evenly matched game, you can do things. But yeah, to be honest, I can't. I don't know. I've only recently learned about them. And I really wish I don't know if they go on the road or anything. I'm guessing they don't, because they're always showing their home games. And hey, there's something to it. I mean, minor league games, there's usually like, you know, 10% of the crowd, but there they sell out all their games.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, it seems fun. The clips I've seen, at least, I don't know. I don't really know fully understand like if they're playing against real minor leaguers or if they have, or they playing against like a Washington Generals type team. Like, is it all exhibitions? I don't know, but it does seem fun. Okay, I'm hungry. I gotta go get lunch. Let's go. Let's wrap this up.
All right. Well, one last thing. We got to talk about the home run totals, because I literally put it in the title, and it'd be egregious if we didn't talk about it.
Oh, yeah.
So the early season home run totals are incredibly, incredibly low. This is just something that, I mean, right now through the first like 10 game, you know, for the first bit, 20, was it the percentage of plate appearances ending in a home run. Jeff Passan put out this today. It's gone down like every year. In 2019, it was like 5.56, then 4.87 in 2020, 2021 was 4.79. So far it's 3.93. And it's not like the weather has been overly bad. There hasn't been any like too many snow outs. It's been a lot of rain. So we know what kind of ball they used last year. So again, we don't know what's going on. We don't know what kind of ball they're using. We don't know what the variables are here. Any guesses? And more importantly, are you doing anything, since it looks like there's enough data now to show us that, yes, there is something, regardless of what it is, that is suppressing home run totals. It is happening. And they could change the ball again like they did last year and use multiple balls. We don't know. We're guessing here. Do you think that it is worth actually using this information? Is this information actionable? Like, if you are short on home runs, are you going to try to maybe look into acquiring power, or maybe like that no doubt kind of power, like early, to try to make up the difference here, since maybe middling home runs may not be there as much? Because it looks like this could be an issue this year. But again, you know, it's MLB. They're going to lie to us. We don't know.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't think there's really anything actionable like someone could do from a fantasy perspective, because like everyone is in the same situation. If it's like, it's across the league that homers are down. So every team, every fantasy team in your league is dealing with the exact same problem. So it's like, if everyone's suppressed, then it's not really going to affect you, I don't think. Like, you know, unless like, you know, if someone in your league has like all of the, you know, all the hot like homer guys, and you have like all the guys who are started cold and you're panicked, maybe you make a play for a guy like a, you know, like a CJ Cron, like I mentioned earlier, or even like, you know, a guy who I thought was possibly a buy low. He actually homered yesterday. So, you know, he may not be as low of a buy now, but, you know, Hunter Renfroe looked, I mean, he's in a great place to hit homers. I think he's going to hit home runs no matter what the ball is. He, you know, he just had his first homer. I wouldn't be surprised if by this time next week, he's got five homers. Like, you know, like it's certain guys that, you know, there's going to be, I think there's going to be a, I wouldn't be shocked, honestly, if homers, you know, start jumping at a certain point, and it's like, huh, I wonder where that new baseball came from. That's weird. You know, like I wouldn't trust MLB to not switch out the baseball at some point. I don't know. They've done it before. I wouldn't be surprised if they do it again. So at a certain point, it's funny though that, you know, Jeff Passan came out with this information about the homers being down, because, you know, as I do my roundups at Razzball, I have been like noticing there's like very few homers across the league. Like so many games, it would be like, you know, a couple runs, but no home runs. And like I was watching, you know, I watched, like I mentioned earlier, I watched Josiah Gray. I watched the Nats and the Diamondbacks. And not that they're great teams. And Dalton Varsho hit a home run that was clearly out and center, that would have been out of any stadium. But there were a few like examples where I'm like, wow, did Nelson Cruz become a doubles hitter? Like, what's going on? The ball is just so dead. And, you know, actually, specifically on Nelson Cruz, he looks like he's finally gotten old. So if there's anything actionable from any of this conversation that we've had, if you're a Nelson Cruz guy, I don't know, man. I mean, maybe he comes out of it, but he looks finally like he's been behind on fastballs that I've seen like over the last, like the first week of the season, he was so behind. I don't know if it's because he's starting slow or what, but yeah, I don't know. Hopefully, and speaking of the Nationals, hopefully Juan Soto doesn't start slow again, because I'm like, oh, I can't handle another get to the break with only 12 homers type year.
And well, unfortunately for him, he may lead the league in walks by 50%. But like you said, like I was saying, everybody, that if this affects your entire league, so across the board, everyone's feeling it. I would think maybe I would look to buy low on, like you said, Hunter Renfro. Maybe it's not as low now. Franmil Reyes, he's off to a real slow start.
Franmil is a good one too. Yeah.
Maybe a couple of guys that have that no doubt power, because maybe if anything suffers, it's those like kind of middling power. If you're a death by a thousand paper cuts player like I am, where you try to get the power and speed guys, those ones that don't have the the high average home run distance may suffer a little. Maybe you try to supplement that with a buy low. Other than that, again, like Gray said, they're probably going to sneak in the new ball. We're going to have a record setting second half of home runs. Who the hell knows? Grob Manfred's a witch. That will do it for the Turn 2 podcast. Gray, thank you for joining me. Thank you for taking the time. Do you have anything new, anything special coming up at Razzball? You're definitely, for anyone who is looking for an edge in their league, you have some of the best tools in the game at probably one of the best prices too. I mean, you look at some of the prices at some of the other sites, if you're looking for some nice in-season tools, they can be pretty up there. You guys are pretty fair and is really great stuff.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate it. I would say, honestly, it's hard for me to say this modestly because it is our tools, but if you're playing fantasy baseball and you're not using our tools, you're doing yourself a disservice. I mean, just to be honest, like you're going to spend for most people in daily leagues, you're going to spend upwards to 1,000 hours on your fantasy league. And for weekly leagues, you're still spending a lot of time. To not then spend $5 a month or, $30 a year on our tools just to have it in your back pocket so you can look at the tools and just to see who to stream for pitchers or who to stream for hitters on any daily, either day or week. I mean, it's really like you are doing yourself a disservice. I mean, I'm just going to say that.
No, even you're right. Hey, you're not being modest. Like you're telling the truth here. For the price you guys charge, it's worth it just in a time-saving aspect alone.
Yeah, it is.
So go sign up for Razzball, everyone. Get to the very top. You can follow Gray at Razzball. Obviously his work over there. So, thank you for joining me. Next week, we'll be back. Steve Gardner will be joining us on the podcast. We'll be talking about, whatever the heck comes up in the next week here. Make sure you download, subscribe, 5 stars, all that. I never asked for that, but again, thank you for listening to Turn 2 Podcast. Enjoy the baseball. We'll be back next week. See everybody.
My, oh my, put me in, coach. I'm ready to play fantasy. I know I turn 2 in a day, but the lace isn't hot in my veins. I can turn 2 in every way, so I turn to YouTube today and smash play. I'm prepared to listen. The X flipping whip got me looking way past the pitches. Statistics all that I know, and I know that who is on first, he can say I'm ready to go. I ain't trying to steal second or third, cause I wanna win first. How am I to put all of these numbers to words? I know the terms from A to Z, it's like a gift and a curse. I know the difference between a splitter and a curve, but if I can't put it into points, man, then what's it worth? I need the truth, I need knowledge. Found this podcast with all of it, but what they call it? Turn 2. Turn 2, what it do? Win leagues. Catch out.